this woman is dead.
Oh, Doctor, don't say that.
Sorry. If you'd only got her here sooner.
As soon as Martha came down with her attack, I rushed her here, Doctor, as fast as I could. I tried to find Dr. Lem first, but I couldn't find
him. Oh, where do you live?
In Greenland, Doctor.
Well, that's about 110 miles south.
There's no other hospital near her.
Well, that's too bad.
Martha. Martha.
Living 1948, brought to you each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations, holds up its radio mirror today to the nation's critical hospital situation, a condition that touches upon the health of every American. In a drama document entitled
Plight of Our Hospitals, a Drama Diagnosis.
Here is your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. A dollar to a donut, the picture many of us have of our hospitals goes something like this. Let's say there's an automobile accident. And before you know it, an ambulance quickly appears upon the scene, whisks the unfortunate victim to a hospital close by. There in the beautifully equipped operating room, just like in the movies, men in white go to work.
This is Aoife. Relax, please. Breathe deeply. Count, please. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Pungent odor makes the world and time disappear. Skilled hands move.
Scalpel nurse. Retractor.
Instruments click.
Probe. Forceps.
Dim voices like pulse beats.
Needle. Suture.
Suddenly.
All right. Finished.
And soon, in the airy, immaculate whiteness of the hospital ward, sunlight fills the room, banishing fear and worry, restoring the weak and shattered body, and life and hope bloom once more. Yes, this is the picture many of us have of hospitals. Fine services, latest equipment, built and supported by some kind of magic, and readily available to all who need hospital care. Now, listen to the facts.
4 out of every 10 counties in the United States have no registered hospitals at all. While some of these counties do not need hospitals of their own, nevertheless, 15 million Americans are too far away from hospitals for their health and safety.
Many of our hospitals, both in large and small cities, are overcrowded, forcing a prospective patient, except in case of obvious emergency, to make reservations well in advance.
Many of our hospitals are obsolete, physically unsafe, poorly equipped, and some so dilapidated that proper sanitation is impossible. Of the 6,200 hospitals registered by the American Medical Association, almost exactly half were unable in 1947 to meet the minimum standard prescribed for approval by the American College of Surgeons.
These are facts, America. Facts substantiated by acceptable authorities. And you can, if you wish, test them yourself in the following way. Assume that now, this very minute, you have a bad accident. Say you fall down the stairs like this.
Hey!
Or let's say you have a ruptured appendix.
The pain. I can hardly move.
Ask yourself,
how soon can I reach a hospital?
Better still,
how soon can I reach a hospital with a bed that's unoccupied?
And don't forget,
what kind of care can I count on?
Maybe you're one of the fortunate few. That's possible. But even so, sickness knows no boundaries. Your own health is threatened by the poor health of others, in your community, in your state, throughout the country. The purpose, then, of this program is to show you how our hospitals got to this state, what this serious problem means to you, and what is being and what needs to be done about it. The history of hospitals reflects the course of civilization. And upon their development, 5 potent influences have left their mark.
Religion.
I, Buddha, command that a physician be appointed for every 10 villages, and that places be constructed to render aid to the crippled and the poor. Let the attendants wear clothes of white, and above all, respect the confidence of the patient.
Yes, the first hospitals were the outgrowth of religion rather than medicine. And with the advent of Christianity, this whole attitude became more widespread and purposeful. Another factor that worked in the growth of hospitals...
war!
I took 40 English nurses to Europe when the Crimean War broke out in 1854.
This is Florence Nightingale.
Though we were hindered by army regulations, treated with indifference by war officials, the men saw what cleanliness, fresh air, pure water, sunlight, and proper care could do.
Florence Nightingale helped introduce scientific nursing techniques. And the lessons learned at great expense in our own Civil War became the basis for the modern medical and hospital services of our armed forces today. Still another factor affecting the development of our hospitals...
progress in medical science.
Go to a hospital, Doctor?
It's the only place I'd trust to operate on you.
But your father, God bless his soul, once operated upon my mother on this very kitchen table.
My father knew nothing of germs, my friend.
Yes, progress in medical science, more than any other factor, is responsible for the modern hospital today. Then, too, also a sculptor of our hospitals...
economic conditions.
Good times.
You will not only be performing a service to the community, sir, by donating the funds to construct this hospital, but providing a living memorial to your wife.
$250,000, you say?
Bad times.
Retrench.
Economize.
I'm sorry, we'll have to close the children's wing.
And the final important factor that has painted our hospital picture?
Public interest.
Hospitals? Why should I donate money toward a hospital? I'm not sick.
Lack of public interest resulting from ignorance and often prejudice has been and still is a real factor in many communities. These five factors, then...
religion, war, progress in medical science, economic conditions, public interest.
These five factors not only spell and still spell the development of hospitals as an institution of society, but mark the way they sit upon our land today. In the words of
Dr. V.M. Hoge, Chief, Division of Hospital Facilities, U.S. Public Health Service.
In the words of this authority, the following is a direct quote.
We like to assume that we have the best hospitals in the world, as indeed we have. But within this framework of general excellence, we have some that are good, some that are indifferent, and too many that are bad. We have a number of hospitals, but we do not have a system of hospitals.
And so we can see, America, that much as Topsy in Uncle Tom's Cabin, our hospitals just grow, with no relation to total need. And the fruit of this tree is of three kinds. One,
voluntary non-profit hospitals. These serve the whole community, both private and charity patients.
Two,
private or proprietary hospitals operated by individuals or groups of individuals for a profit.
Three,
public hospitals, supported primarily from tax funds and operated by states, counties, cities.
Around this three-cornered framework, then, of voluntary, proprietary, and public institutions, has our entire hospital structure grown, America. And as former U.S. Surgeon General Thomas Perrin put it...
with circumstance or happenstance determining the type and location of the hospitals built.
And as the present Surgeon General, Dr. Shealy, says...
tomorrow's hospitals, unlike the hospitals of yesterday, must be planned.
This is the hospital picture, friends, now in the ninth month of living 1948. The question before the House is...
what's wrong with this picture?
Listen. You live in one of the less populated sections of the United States. One day, you're a happy, healthy man, plucking your living from the soil. The next day, something's gone wrong with your tractor hanging on the side of a hill.
Get down from there, son. Let me try it.
Be careful now, Dad.
Listen, I've been handling tractors long before you were born. Now, out of the way.
You climb in, give it the gas.
There she is.
Look out there!
Son, I...
it takes a little time. Time before your son can find the hired man to help get you out from under that tractor. Your hip's pretty bad. It's bashed in.
Easy does it, Jake.
All right, now, lift.
They get you into a car. Your wife stands by, weeping.
Let me come with
you. No, Mom. You need it here. I'll send word back by Jake as soon as we can get him to the hospital.
As soon as we get him to the hospital. My friends, this happened at 7 o'clock in the morning. Let's just count those hours till you reach that hospital. 8 o'clock. 9. 10. 11. Noon. 1 p.m. 2. 3 p.m. From 7 o'clock in the morning to 3 in the afternoon before you can reach an operating room. Before you can even be treated for shock. This is not fiction, my friends. This is fact. But what does all this prove, America?
It proves that the American people as a whole are not adequately served by the present hospital setup. That many of the rural areas of our nation, and 40% of our population is in rural areas, have been neglected.
Some figures. Remember,
40% of all the counties in the United States have no registered general hospitals at all.
Example.
In the Sand Hill region of Nebraska, comprising one-third of the whole state, are three counties along whose main highways serving the area. There is no hospital for a distance of 200 miles.
Perhaps you prefer this kind of situation expressed in human interest terms. Well, you're speaking to a doctor in Belzoni, Mississippi. He points to a bed in his office.
See that bed? That bed is the only hospital cot for 28 miles. Well, I can't even take out kids' tonsils because I have no nurse and can't leave them here overnight. We have to drive 80 miles to get my emergency patients into a hospital. I shudder to think what's going to happen when a twister strikes here.
So much for the uneven distribution of our hospitals. Now let's see what sometimes can happen in many of our major cities where hospitals appear plentiful. You're a mother. It's Friday night and the phone rings in your apartment.
Hello?
Mrs. Graves?
Yes?
Tony's hurt himself.
What?
Yeah, we were playing ball and he slid into third base.
Well, what happened?
We don't know. We're trying to get him to a hospital now.
Well, where are you? I'll come right away.
That was Friday, remember. Now listen to this mother's report.
We couldn't find my son an empty hospital bed until Tuesday. Turned out Tony had a broken leg, and it never did heal right. The other day, the doctor told me...
I'm sorry, Mrs. Graves. Your son will probably have a limp for life.
In many hospitals, in many of our biggest cities, America, three beds are jammed into a room meant for one. Wards are filled with cots laid head to foot. Corridors and other areas never intended to hold a bed are now lined with beds till you can hardly squeeze by. And remember, in each bed, there's a human being no different from yourself, except that he's not well. Again, let's look at some figures.
Health officials have learned that perhaps the best indication of overcrowding in hospitals is presented by figures of daily average occupancy as compared to capacity. The following hospitals, picked at random, give clear indications of serious overcrowding.
Watts Hospital, Durham, North Carolina.
Capacity, 200 beds. Average daily patients, 200.
St. Anthony's Hospital, Rockford, Illinois.
Capacity, 265 beds. Average daily patients, 267.
Garfield Memorial Hospital, Washington.
Capacity, 363 beds. Average daily patients, 381.
Serious overcrowding. That often means to people desirous and needful of hospitalization.
Sorry, no room. We can put you on our waiting list.
A waiting list? For a man who needs a thorough examination of what appears to be a non-malignant tumor, but which may turn out to be, with precious time lost...
Cancer.
Who knows which one of us listening today, because many of our hospitals are so overcrowded, may be next on such a waiting list. How well equipped are our hospitals?
Let me answer that.
And you, sir, are?
Dr. Lewis Block, Division of Hospital Facilities, U.S. Public Health Service.
You're certainly qualified. Proceed, sir.
In my report evaluating hospital operating costs as required under Public Law 725 and known as Bulletin 369...
Yes?
I noted the following facts on pages 10 and 11.
More than 24% of our hospitals of all sizes do not have a blood bank. Only 13% have a cancer clinic. Less than 6% have a mental hygiene clinic. 43% are not equipped with electrocardiograph for use in heart cases. Almost two-thirds cannot give X-ray therapy treatment. Only one-eighth of our small hospitals have their own pharmacy service.
Indeed, survey indicate that probably one general hospital out of four is not acceptable by today's standards.
All in all, America, we need 900,000 additional hospital beds. Existing beds in acceptable general and mental hospitals meet only little more than half of our total needs. Those in tuberculosis hospitals, about half. And we have...
Only a small fraction.
Only a small fraction of the chronic disease hospitals and public health centers we need. And remember, the situation is increasingly growing worse as our population increases. Further complicating this problem, my friends, are the following factors.
We need more doctors to practice in our rural areas. In 1944, there were 634 counties, one-fifth of all the counties in the country, where there was either no practicing physician at all, or a dangerous ratio, less than one physician for every 3,000 inhabitants.
You're a country wife. You're about to have a child. With the first pains, you've sent your husband out to scour the country for the only doctor within miles of you. He returns.
Where's the doctor, Jim?
I couldn't find the doc, Aggie. I hunted everywhere. He went up into the hills yesterday to see somebody hurt real bad, and he ain't been back yet.
Oh, Jim.
I brought Miss Burton, Aggie. She says she'll do the best she knows how for you.
So, assisted by untutored hands, a child is born. Perhaps to live... Perhaps not. In Tennessee, Wyoming, South Carolina. If you would know one of the principal reasons why doctors prefer not to practice in rural areas, let's return to our doctor in Belzoni, Mississippi.
I've had an expensive medical education with over 4,000 operations behind me. It's all going to waste. I have no clinical laboratories, no X-ray. It's impossible for me to know when I've set a bone properly.
Modern physicians are discouraged by lack of adequate facilities in rural areas from practicing medicine as it was taught to them. Therefore, understandably, they purposely seek a decent scientific environment, a place where they can give the best type of medical care in their power. Result, physicians tend to go where the hospitals are. And the old-time country doctor is slowly passing from the American scene. And the result of this, in turn, is...
People in rural areas get less medical care than people in the cities. One of the most tragic results of this inadequate care is the needless loss of life in childbirth and infancy.
And still another factor affecting our present hospital situation is...
Money. Plain, adulterated money.
Lack of money is the fly in the ointment, especially for our voluntary hospitals today, which are supported by public charity and individual contributions. The New York Times recently made a study of the nonprofit institutions in that city and reported...
Steadily climbing deficits alarm voluntary hospitals. 98 nonprofit institutions here face debt of $5 million in 1947, may have to cut services. Plight typical of the United States.
In a series of news stories replete with such terms as...
Desperate, acute, terrifying.
New York's hospital authorities told a story that every housewife can appreciate.
We buy 28,000 different items, ranging from a pin to an operating table. There isn't a single item that hasn't gone up in cost. Sheets now cost $28.90 a dozen. They were $16.60 a dozen 5 years ago. Soap chips were 10.5 cents a pound. Now 29 and one-eighth cents a pound. 80% of our deficits come from cost of living increases in payroll.
And so here we are, my friends, in the midst of a situation that has grown progressively worse. The Depression saw fewer hospitals established, many forced to close. Little construction was possible during the war. And now, as prices rise, the demand too increases, with Americans everywhere, better educated on matters of health, needing and demanding more and better medical care. What are we doing about it? How can you help?
This committee will now hear testimony on the Hospital Act.
You're listening to a congressional committee opening its hearings on this very problem.
Will the first witness take the chair, please?
One after another they come from isolated farm communities, from teeming cities. Housewife, laborer, doctor, farmer, government executive, association representative, private citizen. Their varied statements adding up to...
Give us help. We must have help.
Out of Congress and signed by the president comes a bill, a bipartisan bill with the support of all major hospital associations and medical associations.
The Hospital Survey and Construction Act.
Purpose, one,
to promote sound hospital planning on the basis of demonstrated need.
Two,
to help meet the cost of construction of the necessary facilities.
Now, here's how the bill works.
Let's say that I'm Uncle Sam.
I would say you are.
Let's say this chap over here is a community.
Let's say he is.
He comes to you and me and he says...
I need a hospital.
Can you prove your need in relation to other communities surrounding you? Communities A, B, and C, for instance?
Yes, here's my state plan all worked out, showing that I have an A priority.
Mm-hmm. How about your money?
Uncle, I have 2/3 of the money I need salted away in the bank.
Okay, I'll match your 2/3 with my 1/3.
Since the passage of this act in 1946, 47 states and 5 territories have had their plans approved. Of these, 42 states have 450 hospitals now a building. Hospitals that will draw doctors to communities that need doctors, provide hospital facilities to communities that had none conveniently available before. We are today, America, truly in the midst of the greatest program for the construction of hospitals and health facilities, and on a planned scale... in our nation's history.
Where does that leave me? What does that leave for me to do?
Well, listen.
Your community may, through no one's fault but yours and your fellow citizens, be bypassed by this plan. Investigate. Find out. Help call your neighbors to action. The way is open for you if you can prove the need and pay your share of the cost.
Listen,
if you're without adequate doctor care where you live, look into such plans as Mississippi's.
We're giving medical scholarships to some of our bright young men in return for their promise to practice in our rural communities. For each year of such practice, 1/5 of the loan is wiped out.
Listen,
get behind the local campaigns of your voluntary hospitals. Remember, though the federal program is huge, it cannot meet all our needs. The voluntary hospitals are indispensable to your welfare. If they are to survive their present crisis, they need your help, your support.
The plight of our hospitals, America, is everybody's business. For the problem at heart belongs to each and every one of us. As we said so often during the war, only a strong America, and that means a healthy America, can continue to be a democratic America. If we each face our duties here as responsible citizens, the answer that will roll back to us will not be...
This boy will limp for life.
But...
This boy will walk again.
Not...
I couldn't find the doc, Aggie.
But...
Here's the doc to see you, Aggie.
Not...
This woman is dead.
But...
This woman is going to be all right.
Living, 1948, is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC public affairs staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. The scripts are written by Lou Hazem. Technical advice is by Jane Tiffany Wagner. Music was conducted by Milton Katims. Program direction by Jack Cuny. Your narrator was Ben Grauer. We wish to thank the Hospital Facilities Division of the U.S. Public Health Service for its cooperation in the preparation of this program. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1948 by joining us again next week when we'll present another of our drama documents. Robert Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.